All right, we're here, Invisible Radio, with the mighty Tim Hendricks. What's up, man?
What's up, Troy? How you doing?
We're gonna try to leave the door open so that we can get a little bit of interaction from that room, because there's so many people here tonight, and you know, it's like, so we don't feel like we're just clustered in here. But
yeah,
you gotta
totally.
Like speak into the mic.
Oh, is because, that how that works?
Well, because everybody complains. All right, I gotta back up a little bit. Everybody complains that my voice is always too loud. And then the guest sounds like they're in the other room. So we're going to try to moderate that, even though the levels and everything are all the same.
Bunch of pussies.
That's the complainers. People like that, what you were just talking about. It's like they stalk your life, and then they just find something to complain to you about.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's like, what are you doing with your day that you're not watching every move that I'm making, looking for something to flare up?
Yeah, I know you did 100 decent tattoos in the last month, but I'm going to pull this one out that's semi-decent and tear it apart.
Fuck with it. All right, so what's up? Tim Hendricks, man, in the house, Invisible Radio. So we met in London, like maybe 6-7 years ago, maybe, or longer.
Wait, yeah, wow.
It was longer because I was still.
It was a while ago. I was probably loaded.
Maybe. It wasn't. It was before you got sober. But I think you were holding it together for the sake of the tattoo convention.
Oh, I always held it together in front of everyone else.
Right. And then it was like, yeah, like we met in London, and then at that time you were working at True, because I knew of you by. You being on the roster of the guys while Chris was still involved in the True organization.
That was like True's heyday, man. Yeah. Everyone was there. I was like...
Yeah, like Small Paul, like tons of... Albrigo was there for a bit.
Albrigo, I mean, Kat Von D, Oliver Peck, right. Nick Roden, Mike Suarez, Rick Clayton, Clay Decker, Chris Shit. Garver.
Yeah. That's a killer.
Yeah, I think even Dan Smith came through there for a minute.
Gotcha.
I thought so. I'm not sure. He says no, but I thought he did.
I'm not fessing up to that.
Taku was apprenticing there, who now works at Dark Horse. It was man, it was amazing.
That's rad.
It was something else. Oh, Brandy Collins, who works at Tattoo Land.
Okay.
It was awesome.
That's great.
And then I think I feel like my
go ahead.
Coming here, like my first experience here is I came by because I was on a trip just to say hi, and you were like, hey, you want to do a couple tattoos? And then some of the guys were like, hey, tattoo my hand or tattoo this.
Now, you were just popped in, and then everybody wanted pieces from you.
So,
wanted scripts and stuff.
Enough.
So, it worked out well, and then, you know, it worked out to be a fun thing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Coming through here. Where did you get your start? Where were you born? I know you're Southern California, custom culture, lifestyle, surf, hot rods, like a motorcycle kind of guy. Like, so,
I mean, California kind of has everything, so I got into everything, just like everything else in my life. But, you know, in my neighborhood, I'll lead up to a really cool story, because this is my coolest story as the start of my career.
Gotcha.
I started with homemade crap, and then I used to party. With
party.
A group of people, party. Quote unquote. And I used to party with a girl whose dad was a tattooer, and he sold tattoo machines out of a shop, you know. And so I kind of, like, me and my friends kind of, like, begged her, please get him to sell me a machine. And she had to beg him. And as a father, it was really hard for him to turn down a daughter's request. So he actually was like, okay, I'll do it. Tell him to come down on this day, and here's the address. And I went down to this place and, like, Chestnut Street in Long Beach.
Okay.
And I walked into the shop, and there was this dude.
Did he
who
answer,
like,
the, answer the door wearing a karate outfit?
Yeah, pretty much. He had a huge beard, all stained, white beard like ZZ Top, stained with cigarettes from smoking, and he wore a hat that said, "Yes, it hurts." And he's like, "Are you Tim? Are you my daughter's friend?
Nice.
Come here. You got $225. I was like, "Yes, sir." You know, "Yes, sir." "No, sir." Polite as can be. And you know what, man? This is the craziest thing. This is how, like, lucky I got. That was Rick Walters.
Yeah, I thought it was leading.
The Pike in Long Beach at Burt Grimm's original shop. And he sold me a Catfish Carl machine, and that's how my professional tattoo career started. And Rick and I are still friends to this day.
Did you understand the gravity of who he was at that time? Or was it just the old tattoo guy?
Dude, the old tattoo guy. I had no freaking idea how cool that whole scenario was.
That's awesome.
I mean, It's ridiculous. I do now.
Yeah.
But I saw him at a tattoo convention at the Ink Slingers Ball. Remember that convention?
Yeah, man.
I saw him at the Ink Slingers Ball years later, and I had like a portrait award in my hand. You know what I mean? Like one of those plaques he used to give you.
You did, kid.
Yeah, totally. and I was walking past his booth, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I was like, oh, my God, that's that dude who sold me that machine. And he goes, hey, man, you're that kid I sold that machine to years ago. You're my daughter's friend. I was like, yeah. And he pointed out the plaque. He's all, looks like that's working out for you. And I was like, yes, sir, it is. And you know, we've always remained in touch, always been friends.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really crazy, like, how small and how just how, you know, like, you'll just be in the right place at the right time with those kind of things.
Yeah, I feel like tattooing found me.
Yeah,
as corny as
sure.
that sounds, yeah, you know, it found me.
We all, you know, I feel the same way. So you started. Who was your first biggest influences? Like, what kind of work were you seeing in the outset, and how did that set you on your way? Like, what was the first type of tattoos that you were like, I want to do that style?
Corey Miller.
Corey.
Corey's write up in Skin and Ink. Yeah, you do, right? Written right there.
I just
loved his style. I mean, I grew up right down, well, not right down the street, but very close to Tattoo Land. So I got to see Mark Mahoney's and Jack Rudy's and Freddie Negrete's style, and even like Mike Brown and Creeper. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to emulate their style. But man, for some reason, Corey Miller's tattoos just reached out to me. So I eventually got into a shop where I could pull off decent tattoos and develop a portfolio. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go get tattooed by Corey. I'm going to watch him. And then I'm going to ask him to look at my portfolio. And I mean, we've kind of been friends ever since too. He's been like one of my mentors in a way.
Awesome. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Yeah,
I met him early on. Like I was at Everlasting, like all these guys would just roll through all the time, and it was like such in the cut, you know, to where anybody that came through, you knew they were looking for the spot, and especially if it was like, you know, you see somebody come in and you're like, oh shit, it's like a real tattooer.
Oh, totally.
Like, you'd make the time, you know, to stop what you're doing.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
So yeah, then like, how long did you work with Corey, or did you just kind of admire him from a distance?
I would go in and show him my portfolio, and he would show me the good things about it, and then he'd shatter my ego and tear it apart, and I'd come back a year later, get tattooed, and show him my new portfolio, and he'd do the same.
And it was all based on, well, it's based on getting tattooed also, because people don't realize, like, that's how, you know, man, it's not an established artist's responsibility to be your, you know what I mean, to give you a comeuppance.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know, like, it's like, we got shit to do too, you know, like, when you, it's kind of like when you pay to get tattooed by that person, that's how you're showing, like, kissing their ass and telling them that they're great doesn't mean anything, but when you're actually putting money in their hand and tell them that their time is worth something,
yeah,
then they'll take the time out and do it for you.
And they earn that. Yeah, they earn the right to have people pay them for their time.
And then also, you know, you earn the right to, you know, when somebody asks you a question that's not too intrusive or not too much of a above their pay grade, you know, then they'll give you a little bit of knowledge.
Yeah,
you know, they'll
totally.
Like drop a little bit of knowledge on you.
And I paid Corey's hourly rate one time just so I could count the drops he put in of ink into his ink caps.
Wow.
And then mix them with water. I paid to get tattooed just to make that count. And then he saw me counting, and he put his hand over it, like kind of laughing, like. And I was like, too late, man.
Yeah.
I already got it. I already remembered it.
And so then, you know, when, how, who, you worked with also, like, didn't you work with a couple other people during that time before you went on to be at True?
I worked with Tom Tilden, which was cool. I worked with the Montoya brothers, Mikey and Tommy Montoya.
Okay.
I worked with Jim Miner.
Okay. He was in San Jose now.
Yes, he's in San Jose now.
Yeah.
Yeah, still killing it.
Yeah, really nice work.
Yeah. I worked with my friend Wendy Ramirez, who works in Austin now. I worked with a few different people. A lot of guest artists came in, and I mean, that's...
Wendy is not related to Katya Ramirez.
No.
No, okay.
No, she's not.
They're both in Austin, that's why.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I think so, yeah.
But it was a good place to start, you know. It was where I learned a great deal about tattooing. And we were all, like, real brutal with each other. We wouldn't just suck each other off and say, oh, I love that tattoo. We would say, you know, we'd wait for the person to leave, and then we'd just tear it apart. We'd, you know, we'd we'd break each other down and build each other back up. And so I progressed a lot there. I mean, I developed a pretty heavy drug habit there too. But hey, you know, whatever inspires you.
Partying. Get back to the partying thing. Yeah, like True seemed like a really cool institution at that time, because I don't think L.A. up until that point had like a super shop like that, where there was just like such a large group of guys in one place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a real large group of young guys in one place.
Yeah.
And it was time for that to happen. I mean, like, I think Clay was like working on that for a long time.
Yeah, he
and
was.
And when it finally came to fruition.
Yeah, he great. Opened the street front with Chris, and then it just exploded.
Yeah. That was right, because Garb went to work in Japan and then came back. And, mm-hmm. was like,
and he was working at Shamrock for a minute.
Yeah, and he was like, "I'm out of it. I'm out of New York. I've had enough." So when then you, how long before Chris was doing the show at that time, or what?
Well, Chris, okay, everything was at its peak at True, and then Chris said, "Hey, I'm going to be gone for a little bit. I got to go out to Miami and film for this thing." We're like, "What is it?" And
I got to film filming. This thing. I don't know what the fuck it is.
By the way, your Garver impression is the most amazing thing on earth. If you guys don't know, Troy Denning's Garver impression is so perfect. I couldn't even tell you.
We spent a lot of time together. So
oh, yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't. He's pretty fucking tired of it. So I'll keep it to a minimum.
So he came back with this pilot thing. He went out to Miami. He filmed this pilot for something called Miami Ink, and he came back and he put in a VHS tape.
It's in Miami, and they're doing Ink.
Yeah,
it's this crazy idea.
I don't even own a VHS player anymore, but he put this VHS tape in. And he played this sizzler, and it was like a 10-minute sizzler or something.
The fuck, like a teaser?
Yeah, like a teaser. That's what they call it. They call sizzler. It a
dude,
sizzler.
You got the industry lingo,
you know?
Dude.
Because you're making them. Yeah, you're making them hot.
Making them sizzle.
Yeah. But I looked at it, and he goes, "It's so lame, huh?" And I looked at, I watched it, and I looked at him, and I said, "This is gonna be
it's
huge."
Gonna be huge.
And he said, "You really think so?" And I'm like, "This is gonna change everything."
Yeah.
And it really did, man. It just blew
In a lot of ways that, you know, in for better or for worse, it completely changed everything.
Yeah, it was I refer to it as a phenomenon.
Yeah. So and then when you started to you're at True, and then you were like how'd the guest spot at the Miami shop start? Because they were they were like going full speed ahead at that time. Like, they just had more work that they could deal with, and they were just killing
it. I mean, you know, you were there. Yeah, it was crazy. There would be 50 to 100 people waiting out front of the shop for it to open
day. The tail end of that, but it was still, even for the tail end of something, I was blown away.
Yeah, like blown away. And they, I mean, a lot of them wanted to see the people, so there'd be like the helpers there would do a pep rally.
Yeah.
Like Lee would stand on the table and do a pep rally and be like, "Okay, here's going to be a few different things. I'm going to answer a bunch of questions to the mass right now. A, you will not see a person from the show today. You will most likely not see anyone from the show," and like half the people would leave right then and there.
Right.
You know, so he'd do all these announcements, you know, and kind of explain to people what the hell was going on. And by the time it was over, there was maybe like 10 to 15 people there, or, you know, or 5 to 10 people there ready to get tattooed. And we'd start tattooing them, and then it was just constant all day, all night, all the time. And that was the crew, the BTS crew, the behind the scenes.
Beginning of the BTS crew.
Yeah.
And Miami was still crazy at that time.
Like, oh, my God.
It was nuts. Like,
I still refer to, okay, let me put it this way. My heart has never been more full. You know what I mean? Like you know, I have a lot of great things in my life. I'm married to, like, the most amazing woman on earth. I have a son now. I have great friends.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's what you get when you stop following, like, as I think I stopped following your lady on Instagram. Just for, you know, just out of just
yeah. Well, no, consult. She switched it.
She switched it. All right, whatever. Because I stopped being, you know, like knowing what was going on in her life, and then next thing you know, you guys have a kid. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. I don't post it on mine because I don't want 200,000 creeps looking at my life. My heart right now in my life, my heart has never been so full. But I look back at Miami,
mm-hmm.
and honestly, it was probably the most unadulterated, crazy fun I've ever had in my entire life.
You got to get that out of your system.
I mean, can we be completely honest on this?
Yeah, you can talk about anything.
I'm, you know, I worked so hard that I would have enough money to support my raging drug habit. I would buy a bindle a day and a gram and, like, bottle service, and I'd go eat at nice restaurants, and I'd still, by the next day, be able to make my rent and do a couple of other things. You know, I mean, it's all came from hard work. You know what I mean? It wasn't crazy without revealing too much, but it was, you know, it was just all hard work, 12 hours a day, 12 hours a day, 12 hours a day, tattooing nonstop. And I could live the life that I thought I wanted to live, you know.
Well, when you're, you know, and also when you're not, you know, when you're single and you're just like working your fucking ass off, the idea of just going home and repeating that,
yeah,
you know, as tired as you may seem, you may feel like the idea of just going home and repeating that is like you want to shoot yourself. So you're like, I'm gonna go. You find the energy to go out and abuse yourself.
Oh
and
yeah,
and then repeat it the next day.
Yeah, they call me the machine.
Yeah. I've been there too, then. Like, you know, you're working in Japan and stuff like that. You're like, I'm not going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll stay out all night and then do three fucking big ass basketball sized tattoos the next day. So yeah, hanging out at the BTS house. Who was there at that time? Who was that crew?
Oh, at that house, yeah. Or just the whole crew working there?
Well, it was Lee. Lee was like the
Lee was the helper,
the ringleader.
Yes.
Right?
Like the house. Oh my god.
He was like the guy that like corralled everybody. And
he was the devil's advocate.
Yeah, he's the one that like would make sure that like, you know, if like some pretty girl came in, she, you know, they found out where she was going to be drinking that night. After
without
the tattoo
a doubt.
And all that kind of stuff.
He had all the information. I love this bobblehead of Mark Brandon Reed Chopper here. This is amazing.
I got a lot of fun stuff.
I love staring at that. Conan.
I got Conan. I got Chopper.
Bane.
I got Bane. I got some whiskey. you know, necessary grown-up shit.
Yeah. That house was crazy, man. You know, there was like, at any given moment, there was something happening. It was just like when you started tattooing, how, like Dan Dringenberg said, you never wanted to be gone from the shop because you never wanted to miss
something. You didn't
want
to miss anything.
You didn't want to miss a thing. That's how it was in Miami. That's how it was with the BTS crew. You just never wanted to not be a part of what was going on because you didn't want to miss something. Because as soon as you went and were like, I'm going to go home early, something happened.
That's right when, yeah, dude, you never guess who came in.
Yeah.
And dude, you know, or like, These people came in and they got huge fucking tattoos.
Or like,
you know,
when Dan Dringenberg got into a fist fight at a bar because someone tried to steal his bag and he hurt his knee. He hurt his bad knee already. He got on his motorcycle and he took off on this enduro and he realized that he couldn't get off his bike. So he just went in on his motorcycle to the Rite Aid, pulled up to the counter, turned the motorcycle off, leaned up against the counter and said, can you give me a knee brace?
Right.
And she went, got him a knee brace and brought it back and gave it to him. He paid for it, and then he asked the other guy, the manager, hey, will you help turn me around and push me back outside? I mean, I would pay massive amounts of money to see that security footage.
That would be amazing. That would be fucking amazing. He was like leg locked up or something. He couldn't.
Yeah, it was done.
Stuck in that.
He could never get back on that bike, so he just pulled right in.
That's amazing. Yeah, so then when you went back to working in the Orange County area, right? Like at Gold Rush or whatever.
Yeah, I left Miami and I went back to Orange County and I'd do some stuff at Gold Rush.
Had you
and
always
Spotlight.
Been into making machines? Was that did you start like tinkering with machines as when you started tattooing? Did you also were of the mindset like I got to figure this shit out? And you've always been like a tinkerer kind of guy.
Yeah, I was a kid that would pull apart everything, try to put it back together. Okay. You know, and I think machines always fascinated me. And 1998, I went to Dallas, Texas, and I worked for Eric Inclan, and I built my first handmade machine out there. And I just when I was at home, I had no access to building it. I didn't have all the equipment. I didn't know how to manage that. And then when Dan Dringenberg got out of jail, I went in, I think it was the second time, I went out to Shamrock when it just opened, and I bought a tattoo machine off Dan in 2002. Mm-hmm. So it had been 4 years since I built my first handmade, and then just kind of assembling them. And Dan said, hey man, you come out of the machine shop and work to learn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I would love to do that. And I was there all the time. I just about lost like a girlfriend at the time over it. I was either at the shop or at Dan's machine shop, and I would just work to learn. And he just pretty much taught me everything I know. He didn't teach me everything he knows.
Right.
I'm still learning, but yeah, he taught me everything I know about machines, man. And I still love it. I could just build machines all day, all the time, if I didn't want to always tattoo all day, yeah, all the time.
You know, you're lucky to be able to be proficient in so many things, you know, like definitely the knowledge of, you know, knowledge of the mechanics of something makes it, gives you like a much rounder, you know, perspective.
As
nothing can, you know, you have to, there's nothing can come bad from having a great understanding of your tools.
Oh, totally. I mean, just making needles. Like, we come from a generation of making needles. So when
people don't make needles. Yeah, now.
No, and they don't understand,
don't
like, oh,
make
I
them
like.
Again, but I know.
No,
how.
I never want to make them again. But when I look at a needle, or like, you see those guys that are like, hey, I really like these needles. Well, why do you like them? Do you know why you like that particular needle? Or do you know what an eye loop even is? So they don't even know why they like them because they never learn how to make them.
Yeah, and they don't nobody even eye loops their needles anymore. Nobody, well, because, but also there's with the, I guess, how, you know, the mass produced way that they're made now, less people are handling them.
Yes, that's,
do you know,
true.
What I'm saying? Like, so it's like back in the day, man, from you making them to wrapping them and bagging them and then sterilizing them and then setting them up in your machine, there's already it already said, and the needle had traveled so much that you always had to be like, well, what the fuck?
Oh yeah, needles are so sharp now. I can feel them dulling after a couple hours of shading, and I'll switch mags.
Yeah, yeah.
Without trying to teach too much, blur that out.
they're gonna be like, dude, that's the secret.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you started coming out when Ami did the New York show.
Yeah.
After the Miami thing had run its course.
Yeah.
Then he does the New York show, cast you because you're, you know, young and handsome, and and talented and everything, and Dreamboat. And then so you started coming out here, and then we had tons of fun when you first started coming out here for that.
Yeah, that was awesome. Great. I got a lot of love for New York. You know what? It's funny because I left New York disliking New York, and now I realize in hindsight that I disliked filming, you know, and I had blended the two together.
It's fucking invasive.
It is, man.
You're forced to endure a lot of shit that you morally just can't really disagree with.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, you know, you're like, yes, I understand the big picture. You don't have to fucking, you don't have to tell me the big picture. I get it. But, you know, like, I got to fucking be around. And it's like the crew are all cool people, but it's all these people with their ideas
that are trying,
you know, like all the writers and everything and all these people with all these ideas. And like, why don't you just do this instead?
Yeah. And then a lot of it's like, well, do you think it's going to be good for ratings? Yeah, oh, then never mind. You know, I'll be honest. I did some of my worst tattoos on camera because, I mean, look at the shop right now. Right now at the shop, we got a bunch of people out that door right there, all, you know, sharing their energy, talking shit, having a good time. There's really good music playing on the radio. You know, there's things happening. Somebody might be painting. There's this over here. And then on a set, there's nothing happening. There's
nothing
no music.
Going on at all.
Nothing at all. And then they used to make fun of me because I would light an incense at my station, and I rarely light hippie sticks while I'm tattooing. You know, that's like a home thing. And I would light incense at my station, and they make fun of me, and I'd be like, look, I need at least one of my senses stimulated.
Yeah.
Because nothing is stimulated.
It's a bunch of artists, like, performing under duress.
Oh, my God.
You know, you're performing under duress, and you're trying to act like it's natural, and it's not natural. And
yeah.
There's not, and you have no, there's no, they try to build up all this fake, like, drama and, like, with your client, but like you would never talk to them that way in real life.
No, not at all.
And the way that you talk to them in real life is so much cooler and so much more loose and just like, you know, like it's more human.
Yeah, and you know what, man? As far as New York goes, they just absolutely blew it editing the show together because, like, man, I tattooed the Hudson River survivors. We all sat down and tattooed the Hudson River survivors, and they told their story of a plane, like the plane crash landing in the Hudson River and then having to make a human ladder and climb all over each other to get into a tugboat to be saved. And these people had the most amazing story. It was so amazing, he said, that half the people on the plane got up out of their seat and turned around and looked at the seat. And he didn't understand why at first. And then later he found out from, like, you know, in learning about violent and crazy things like this, people turned around to see if they were still there, if they were having an out-of-body experience, to see if they were still in their seat and they were like a ghost. Yeah. They did that. They told this amazing story, and they cut it into like 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. So that way they could fit drama with the helpers screaming at each other. And it was like, man, if people want to watch that, they'll turn on Jersey Shore. There's 100 other lame fucking reality shows that don't involve talent.
People with mohawks like throwing shit at each
other.
Yeah.
And, you know, when famous people come on the show to get tattooed, they have this mediocre story.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you're like, I don't care about you.
Completely mediocre.
Oh, it's the worst.
They have no real life experience.
And no one wants to hear that. People can relate to ordinary people with some extraordinary stories they've been through in life. Yeah, and that's all that people want to watch the show for, totally. And they just blew it. But, you know, that's life.
Blown it is their MO, though. You know, they blow it upwards. They continue to they fail upwards because they continue to kind of, like, you know, keep doing versions of the same shit. Over and over again, and not, you know, like, not ever trying any kind
Isn't that
like,
the definition of insanity?
Well, yeah. But somehow there's still funding for it, or they just figure out ways to make it cheaper,
you know, they do.
Or whatever. So you surf a lot, yeah?
Yes, I do.
You still surf a lot?
Yes, I do. I love
You're
surfing.
You're like a big wave surfer. I saw the photos.
I wouldn't call myself a big... I had the lucky opportunity to surf some big waves in my life.
Okay.
But I do get a thrill out of when the waves get about eight to 10 foot and above, for
what
sure.
What are the coolest places that you've been, like the most mind-blowing
Indonesia,
spots?
Man. Indonesia.
Like Bali?
Oh, yeah. Bali, yeah. Indonesia. I mean, Hawaii always has a massive place in my heart. All the guys over there have always treated me amazing, and I met my wife there.
I went to Hawaii, like, August, a couple years ago, for the first convention.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I went up to the North Shore, and it was, like, I guess the only time of the year when there's no surf whatsoever.
Flat as a board.
It literally looked like like a bad day in San Francisco. Like, it was there was nothing happening.
Yeah, beautiful water, though.
Yeah, it was amazing.
No,
I
like Indonesia. I mean, it's just... like it takes so long to get there, you feel so far away from everything, and the waves there are absolutely flawless.
Yeah, I bet. How often you travel for work now? Do you like still do tattoo conventions? How do you integrated your machine building enterprise into part of your whole thing? So it's like when people see you, they can count on being able to, you know, being able to deal with you with machines and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I love going to conventions. It's hard now with, like, it's just life, you know, getting to so many. I'm just not the Rolling Stone like I used to be. But I definitely do, like, the London convention, the SFO convention.
Right.
I mean, and then I leave myself open for little ones here and there. Excuse me. But I love conventions because sometimes, man, it's the only time I get to see people.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we met at a convention.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I never really get all choked up in goodbyes with people because I'm always like, I'll see you again. You know?
Totally.
Like, and then not that I'm devaluing, you know, how much I enjoy spending time with you, but it's like, we'll see each other again, dude. You know? It's like, you know, even if, you know, you're leaving New York, we'll see each other very sooner than we probably think.
Yeah, you and I aren't sensitive about that. We know we're going to see each other.
Totally.
You know what conventions are to me? Family fucking reunions.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's a really fun, like, that's what I always love about the Milan convention is that it's so centralized. Like, you walk in and there's the lobby. You know what I mean? There's the lobby bar. And you got to just check into your room and then go down to the lobby bar and just sit down. And then everybody's going to be coming through there at some point. And that's, like, it was so fun. Like, because other ones where they're more decentralized, conventions that are more decentralized, like London, you got to really make an active effort to, like, meet up with everybody.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You see them at your booth and stuff, but then when, like, everybody's going out, it's like everything. And London as a city is, like, leaves a lot to be desired because everything closes so early.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to, like, make shit happen with people that you want to see.
Yeah,
you know?
I just usually hang out in front of Frith and I see everyone. Or go to Moe's Party. Moe's Party
the party
Thursday
on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's the meeting
spot.
Grounds.
And then, you know, then for myself, you know, I always feel like fucking shit the next 2 days because I got way too fucking...
jet lag and booze.
Jet lag and booze on that fucking little street.
Totally.
What else is going on right now? Like, so you got a lot of stuff going on with you in California. You made a move, right?
Yeah, I recently bought Classic Tattoo in Fullerton.
I was familiar with Classic Tattoo from Eric Mosky.
Yes. Well, Charlie
that
opened.
That was the original. Okay.
And he had two Classic Tattoos, one in Upland, and he had Fullerton, and he sold the one in Fullerton to Eric.
Okay.
And then Eric redid it and ran it for a while. And then when Eric passed away about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. his father, Dave, fought for it for a while. And Eric and I weren't real close, but we were acquainted and, you know, we were friends. Mm-hmm. And it was Dave that I was closer with. And Dave and I knew each other through various things. And I always stayed in, you know, stayed in touch with him and helped him out as he was trying to keep that shop going.
Gotcha.
And then Dave had just been poor of health the last couple of years, and he hit me up, and he was talking about asking me to run the place, and I told him I just don't have time to run the place with me doing my my tattoo supply store, mm-hmm. you know, working on that and tattooing and, you know, making a family and all that. But about a month after that, he said, look, would you want to just buy it? And I said, yeah, man. And I mean, that's like
you're like, hey, man, I ain't got time to help, but I will own it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because then I got all the time. Because then that fits into my scheme. You know what I mean? Yeah. That fits into my vision for domination.
Yeah, I guess totally. So, right? Well, I mean, you know, I was working at Gold Rush and all that, and I just couldn't. I just running a shop is a whole different thing than yep. owning it and running it. When you're running, you know, if I'm running it, well, I'm working twice as hard for the same amount.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have time.
Well, and also
for that.
You don't see it as like, you know, running this place. It's just I love all these guys, and I, you know, like this is my vision and it's like my dream. So
yeah,
you know, but if I were like, if somebody were like, hey man, can I like, can you come help me like get my shop together? I'd be like, I don't think I'm really the dude for that. You know,
yeah,
I can sit you down. We can have dinner once a month, and I can tell you what you're doing wrong.
Yeah,
but I
and
cannot,
that's what I did. I
can't
with
be
that.
I can't be in there like, you know, watch it babysitting your dudes. I mean, because I don't have any love for those guys.
Yeah, totally. You know? But I mean, dude, man, it was crazy. We worked out a deal for about 3 or 4 months. We were working on it and meeting up, and I was trying to help him out with his health problems and all that. And then right before the deal was pretty much going to go through, he fell ill and he passed away.
Okay.
And we kind of thought the shop was gone. You know, we were just like, well, that's kind of it. And then there was a couple of wills. There was the guy Shane Trulin, who is Eric's friend, and Dave's friend, and that looked like it was that was it. That the shop was Shane's, and Shane didn't want to do it. You know, he's not a tattooer. He understood it. He mm-hmm. gets tattooing. He says, I'm going to give the shop to the guys there. You know, and.
Right.
And then Dave's sister came out of the woodworks, and she apparently had a will that superseded that. And she just started farming the shop out and telling people that no one was interested, even though she knew that Dave and I had a deal because she wanted more money. Mm. And it was a nightmare for about 2 weeks until we figured everything out and all, you know, all the air was cleared,
yeah,
and she couldn't lie anymore.
I've never had to dispute any kind of will situation.
Oh man!
But any kind of commercial lease fucking situation,
it's gnarly.
Lawyers and like business lawyers, like that'll make you fucking want to kill yourself.
I've never seen that because my family never had any money, so anyone died usually left debt, not money.
Yeah, totally.
I've never seen that side of human beings before, and I'll tell you what, man, it is an ugly cologne to wear,
yeah,
and I
for
do
sure.
not want to see it again as long as I live. But you know, all said and done, man, I got the shop, and the guys are stoked, and their stuff was locked in there for a month. They couldn't feed their families, and they're all back working and happy. And
oh, dude, that sucks. It got like that, to where it was like
everything was locked away,
property of the
it was terrible.
That's fucking horrible.
And you know, but you know what, man, I'll tell you this. It was so much up and down a roller coaster when I walked in that shop, and I was sitting there, and everyone was texting and calling me and telling me how happy they were. And even people that I didn't know that well but that were really close to Eric, they were telling me how stoked they were. And they really, you know, they think it's a good thing, and they wish me the best and all the luck. And if they need any help, I was just so overwhelmed. And then I looked down at my station, which was the exact same station I got tattooed at over 20 years before.
Oh, that's rad.
Which is where
that's
I got
so
my
cool.
first professional tattoo. My dad taught across the street. For 10 years.
Oh, so you're from that actual area.
I grew up like 2 miles away. And
oh,
so
that's
my dad taught across the street for 10 years before he died a block away. My mom taught across the street at the high school for 10, 15 years before she just retired the other day. And both my brother and my sisters went to the high school across the street. It was just heavy. I drove home and I called Lindsay Carmichael, and I'm not ashamed to admit, I kind of started crying on the phone, like I broke down, and I was like, I gotta call you back. I got something caught in my throat.
It's all right to cry about that kind of stuff. It's not all right to cry about pain, physical pain, or like anything that you could have stopped. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
You know, anything that, then you're just being a bitch. But
you did it to yourself.
Things, it's good. You
know? No, it was awesome, man. I'm very blessed, and like I said earlier, my heart has never been so full, and life is good.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah. Well, anything else you want to talk about, man? Any other projects that you got going on that you want to bring to light in out in the internet land?
No, man. I don't know. I think we covered everything. I'm just grateful that I got to awesome, sit down and talk with you. This is the most we talked in a while.
It is really because you know we never really. Okay, like we'd go out with couples.
Yeah.
But then our time is still compromised.
Yes,
like we
totally.
We rarely just hang out, just you and I. It's always either mini tattoo convention, which is like what's going on here now.
Yeah.
Where it's
everybody's
fucking, you know, everybody's all tattooing each other and catching up and talking shit.
Uh-huh.
Or you know, so like, you know, we don't get a chance to really just one-on-one chop it up.
You know what's great about that is that we're the type of people that know we'll be friends until either one of us dies first, and we're not tripping, and we're not getting sensitive
I've always been that way. Like, you know, it's like, you know, dude, we're always cool, and we'll always be cool. I'm the kind of guy that like falls out of favor with people.
I love that.
All right, man, this has been the mighty Tim Hendricks, Invisible Radio. Thank you very much, bro. I love you.
Thanks for having
me.
I love
you too.
All the
best, man. Good luck on everything new, and congratulations with your family and everything, man.
Thanks, Troy.
I love you. Thanks.
I love you too. Bye.